To be perfectly honest, it's still so hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that this movie is actually happening.
And welcome back to Talking Beasts. I'm Glumpuddle. Really quick plug before we start the discussion. NarniWeb shirts and hoodies are now available. Really excited about these. They have the NarniWeb logo on the front, and if you like, we can add follow the signs on the back in anticipation of the silver chair. They're available in green or brown. I'm plugging them here because we're trying to raise money to continue doing these podcasts. A lot of work goes into these, and I really hope we can keep these up, but there are a number of expenses we have to cover, such as microphones and media hosting and things like that. So if you'd like these episodes to keep coming, order a NarniWeb shirt or hoodie at narniweb.com/products. Place your order by September 30th if you want to be in the first batch. Once again, proceeds support the podcast. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Now, on to the discussion. Once again, what you're about to hear is the audio from a video podcast I recorded with Rillian and Jimfan. If you'd rather watch the video, which of course I'd recommend, click the YouTube link in the description. Enjoy, post a comment, and subscribe. Thanks a lot.
What is something that you just would love to see them just hit the nail on the head on this scene or this moment or this part of the film? It could be a design, casting concept. It could be a story moment, something that maybe you haven't even seen done just that well in any of the Narnia movies before.
Well, one of the things I think I had on my list, what I guess I've kind of already covered a little bit, but I had just really sell the emotion of the despair and then the hope. Take time to really spend time on what a dark place Narnia is in right now. Don't just say, oh yeah, by the way, you know, their king's going to die without an heir. Let's really take the time to feel that. Let's slow the story down and not just rush through it. Then let's take time, kind of what Fantasia Kitty wrote in her opinion piece, let's take time to enjoy it when Rillian is restored back to Caspian, even if it's just for a brief moment. And there's when you actually get back to Caspian, take time to feel that and feel the joy. Don't just say, okay, the story's over, we can roll credits and get out of here. Maybe if we can, I don't know if we actually have to have the snow dance with the fawns or not, but let's take time to enjoy the joy that Narnia feels that their prince has come back. Let's just not just end the story. Oh, okay, the story's over. So take time on the despair and let us really feel the joy when Narnia is restored. I felt that the Prince Caspian movie, its strongest point is it did a pretty good job on the sadness and the longing for the fact that old Narnia is gone and, I wish it could be the way it used to be. But they didn't, to me, deliver on the joy when it finally did come back. It was kind of like, okay, they had a military victory and they pulled out their swords and they beat them all, okay. But I didn't have the excitement of, yay, the old days are back, like you do in the book with Bacchus and Silenus and the trees coming back and everything. So that would be my number one constructive criticism, hope, the thing that they would do for the movie, I think.
Yeah. Like, to be honest, like, it's so hard for me to think of like a specific thing that I'm really hoping to see, because to be perfectly honest, it's still so hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that this movie is actually happening. Like,
we don't have a release date yet, in fairness.
Like, after Dawn Treader came out, like that whole like just seeing how it didn't work out the way it was supposed to, and the whole franchise just kind of died off. Like, I genuinely thought, well, there's that. Like, I'm not going to see any more Narnia movies in my lifetime until maybe 20, 30 years from now when they reboot it. Because this is what Hollywood does. Like, yep. I still feel like I will see a reboot.
Or 2 years with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spider-Man is the eternal reboot. But I still feel like I will see a reboot of Narnia in my lifetime. Probably my later lifetime. But so for me to be like, oh, they're not rebooting.
Well, this is kind of a reboot.
It is, but they're not
get too much into what that what the word reboot means.
But they're not starting over from the beginning. You know, they are starting. It is the Silver Chair. It's one we haven't seen on the big screen yet. So I'm still sort of in this state of like extreme skepticism that like
kind of you let that old franchise
really
go. You'd let it go. You'd made your peace. It's back.
And now it's back. And I don't know how I feel about it, because it's not the same franchise. Like, I mean, it's obviously it's Narnia, but they're not with any of the previous companies.
Care Paravel could look completely different.
Exactly.
Like, it was rebuilt anyway.
Yeah.
Care Paravel was rebuilt after we last saw it. So,
but it's like,
they could just kind of throw away the old continuity. And anyway, we've talked about that.
I'm like, I don't even know, like, do they even have the rights to the logo? Like, is the logo even going to look the same? You know,
Joe Johnson emphasized, you know, like when he was asked about the cast and said, well, Will Poulter's too old. But he also said, but more than that, I want this to have a unique look and feel. So I think he doesn't want you to be thinking about this as movie four. I think they kind of want you to think of it as movie one.
Yeah, which I don't know how I feel about that, just being like, it's Silver Chair. I don't know how much, to me, that doesn't really feel like the start of anything. It really does feel like more of like a middle.
See, I think it does feel like
I think you can make it into it.
You have Jill, a new character. She's never been to Narnia before. You know, she doesn't know who, from her perspective, the mystery of who is Eustace is kind of interesting. All we know is he's a very different boy now than he used to be.
But like, I feel like if you don't have that background of Eustace, it makes getting into his character a lot more difficult.
See, but I think Silver Chair focuses so much on Jill, and I like the idea of, I think if I hadn't read any of the other books, that would be an intriguing hook. That, okay, all we know about this mysterious boy is he's really different than he was a year ago. Jill talks about that. And he claims to have been from another world. That's all we know. And then, of course, we found out, oh, he was telling the truth. To me, that's an intriguing hook for a story. And we would see Jill, or Aslan, from Jill's perspective. Like, we don't know if Aslan's going to eat her or not from her perspective.
Yeah, so that's true.
Silver Chair can actually be a really, like I said in the previous podcast, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the best start for the series, the way to get introduced to it.
Yeah.
But my second choice, if it's not Wardrobe, would not be Magician's Nephew. It would be The Silver Chair. Mm. I think that's a better book one than Magician's Nephew.
So I guess when I say, like, what am I, like, excited, what I'm hoping to see, like, I'm still just, like, just excited to just see it. Like,
uh-huh.
I hope it can keep the tone of the book. You know, it's like I said before, like, don't, like, make it into this, like, action-y thing. Like, that was one of my big problems with Dawn Treader. Like, Dawn Treader is an adventure story. It's not this epic quest of life or death. Like, it's an adventure, you know. We're exploring Narnia and we're seeing all these
having the green mist conflict was fundamentally different.
Yeah, it was so different. And so for me, I hope for Silver Chair that it can keep that. It's like what you said, like that, it's like that feeling of just like hopelessness and like, what are we doing? Like, this is just like, we've just been given these instructions and nothing else to go on. Uh-huh. It's just kind of like this slow thing. And then the picture becomes a little bit clearer and a little bit more clear. And then at the end, there's just this massive payoff where you just realize
the payoff. That's what they've been missing from the other movies.
Yeah. Right? So it's like, this is what the goal was. We just didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm. I like what you're saying, because that kind of ties into, really, I have two that came to mind. One is thinking about the payoff and where Narnia is at the beginning, and the scene where Caspian's resurrected is such a memorable scene.
Could easily get cut out.
And here's the other difficulty with it. You deal with multiple endings, and it's a hard thing to deal with in films. You know, Return of the King had to have those multiple endings, but it struggled with it.
It got criticized for it.
People weren't sure when the movie ended. It was just, you know, and it's a very hard thing to do. And that's something here. You have the, spoiler alert, the Lady of the Green Kirtle is defeated. And
I hope you've read the books if you're watching.
And, what?
And
what?
So you have that. And you have them coming back into Narnia. Of course, you also have
even within that same Lady Green Kirtle, you've got rescuing Rillian. Escaping Underland.
Yeah, Escaping Underland, Endeland coming to an end. You have
Caspian being reunited
with Rillian. You have, after Caspian and Rillian are reunited, Caspian is brought back from the dead. Then you also have the bullying conclusion at the very end of Experiment House. So this is why I could easily see Caspian's resurrection being thrown out, and even if it's not thrown out, it'd be a difficult scene to do.
I mean, if you follow the book, the like after Rillian is freed from the chair, it could easily be another like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
If you did all that stuff.
And so I think about just Caspian's resurrection there, and you know, I thought about, you know, I like analyzing films, and I watch films, and I look at how films are made, and I listen to the creative minds behind them. And I have to say that would be a challenge, I think, for anyone to do
To keep it in, you mean?
Yeah.
To keep it in and do it right.
Yeah, and but you're right.
I would love to see nailed on the head.
A book that's so much about despair. We need to see Caspian rise from the dead. We need to see that there's hope, and there should be an acknowledgement of the fact that, to me, what I see emotionally about at the end is like, look, there's bad things that happen in the world, and they're just bad, and we need to acknowledge that and acknowledge the reality of that. But also have a sense of, at the same time, we can have a sense of hope at the end. And the only way to do that, I think, is to have Caspian die, but say, but it's okay. There's hope beyond death. Acknowledge the darkness, but offer joy at the
same
time.
And it's such a key scene because they mourn him,
too. Don't deny the darkness.
Yeah.
Even as he's about to resurrect him, they mourn him.
Yes. They actually, even though Aslan's about to bring him back to life, they still take that moment to mourn him. So we're not denying the darkness that's in our world, but we're saying it's there and then offering hope.
And I think that actually the one thing that could actually make a really good case just from like a, because like you said, like having this, these multiple endings thing, like it is super,
it's tricky,
super tricky. But the one thing that really makes a strong case from like a cinematic standpoint to keep it in, I think, is that if the plan is to, like they said, their plan is to make 3 movies. So if, which we assume that
they said a trilogy. Joe Johnston talked about this being the start of a new Narnia trilogy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of debate about did he literally mean 3 movies and what did he mean by that?
Yeah.
If he did.
But we assume like, okay, they're not planning on this to be a one-off. And they're planning to have an ending, like the logical ending is the last battle. So
the logical ending of the series.
Yeah. The logical ending of the series is the last battle. And so, the one thing that is kind of introduced in Silverchair, or that's kind of emphasized, is the, I mean, like the first time you really hear about it is in Dawn Treader, like Aslan's country. Like, this is a place you can go. And then in Silverchair, Caspian goes to Aslan's country, you know, after he dies, and then he is resurrected, and so he's living with Aslan in Aslan's country now. He's not in Narnia anymore, but he's in Aslan's country.
Right.
And then in the last battle, this is a huge thing, because this is where everyone goes. So I think being able to establish this concept of the afterlife, there is more beyond just Narnia.
And we can even tease it a little bit, so we just see a little bit of it, but we know there's a lot more
but
to
just
this
like,
afterlife. We're not
so this
now.
Isn't like this foreign concept to people. You get to the last battle, it's like dun dun dun, and then like what is this, like you just pulled this out of nowhere. Like this whole concept of like there's
all the characters we know are still alive there.
Yeah,
like, we could actually tease it a bit,
like because it already has been teased a little bit. Like Reepicheep goes to Aslan's country, but we don't see what happens to him afterwards,
right?
You know, like we just know that's where he went, but like
I never even thought about that in the books, the fact that we certainly get a sense of Reepicheep just disappears into Aslan's country. We don't see anymore. Then in Silverchair, we get a little more. We actually see Caspian come back from the dead, and we get a little bit of what, you know, this idea of reunion and afterlife. And then in Last Battle, of course, that's the final payoff where everyone from the whole series, including Puddleglum, comes back.
So, like, that, to me, that is, like,
wow,
the strongest case for, like, keeping that in, just because, like, if this is really, like, if you're trying to make this, like, a continuation, like all three of these are going to kind of tie in together.
I just wish they hadn't botched it in Dawn Treader, in my opinion. But.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been better, but it's still, saying that, it's still going to be really, really difficult.
It's true.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought of that, just how that would tie in to all the others. Sometimes you forget.
I have a theory about why they would make 3 instead of just 2.
That should be another podcast.
And
I also want to say,
we have done a podcast on that.
And I have to say something here in terms of things I think, what would I really like them to just get? Oh man, like they just nailed it in the Silverchair. And I've never seen this, or rather heard this done in any Narnia adaptation, and that's the voice of Aslan.
Like really done right, you mean?
Really done right. I really liked Liam Neeson. I liked Liam Neeson.
I did.
I liked him. I think he did the best job I have heard thus far. I have not listened to the Patrick Stewart Last Battle.
Stewart reads the Last Battle.
Yeah, he reads the Last Battle. I haven't listened to that one.
It's just what you would sound like. It's Picard as Aslan.
Yeah. So but I've heard other
engage.
I've heard other voices and. You know, you have some, like, you had the BBC one that was falling asleep, and you had the David Suchet that in the Family
David
Radio series.
David Suchet.
He ranged from, like, oh, wow, that sounds like Aslan, to I don't know what that would be, but it sounds really weird. But, you know, Liam Neeson did a good job, but I listened and I thought, it just doesn't sound like Aslan.
Oh, I think it's I would like a younger sounding Aslan. I actually thought that Brian Cox would have been an interesting choice because I think he has a wild, maybe that's what I'm talking about, a wildness in his voice. When I hear, they've gone the, and again, we don't really have the, oh, we're just putting Aslan in there because he's in the book. We don't really have a great reason of why. I think you're going to do, well, I guess he's a lion and he's kind of an old mentor kind of character, so we give him kind of a grandfatherly wisdom kind of voice.
Qui-Gon Jinn?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go with Qui-Gon Jinn. But I think it would be more appropriate is, if, what's the defining thing we know about Aslan? He's not a tame lion. When I hear Liam Neeson's voice, I don't hear that. I picture kind of an old guy in his armchair full of wisdom kind of voice. I think Aslan should feel unpredictable and not tame and wild. So I think sort of a younger sounding, maybe even kind of a gravelly kind of a little bit kind of Aslan who might do anything would be more appropriate. Again, I liked Liam Neeson too. I thought it was not a very, it was adequate, but it wasn't very inspired.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, I think when they were doing the character of Aslan, like in the movies, like, you know, like, okay, this is this big character. Like, he's very, he needs to be reverent almost, you know?
Yeah.
So then it, you kind of, you forget that, like, in the books, there's, like, some moments where Aslan is almost, like, silly and very unpredictable and just does things where everyone's just kind of like, what, you know, and that, but that adds to the thing of like, he's not a tame lion.
How
he's
many things, when he meets Jill, how many things does he say where you're like, what?
Yeah.
Swallowed up girls and boys, women and men, emperors and cities. And
yeah. So I understand, like, in the movie, they're like, we're trying to make him this very awe-inspiring character, but then you do lose that sense of unpredictability.
You actually lose it. Like, I think if he mm-hmm. feels too predictable, you lose that sense of awe because you feel like you know exactly what he's going to do. Like, when are there any lines in...
That's a good point. You feel like you know exactly what he's going to do at every point.
Like, are there any lines in the movies that really caught you off, like would catch someone who hasn't read the book even, caught them off guard?
Yeah, no.
Like, there's nothing to compare to that line. You know, I've swallowed up girls and boys, cities and emperors and all that. There's nothing to even compare that to.
And it's like, and can you even picture in your head the Aslan from the movies doing something like playing with Trumpkin? Like, can you even picture that in your head?
It's like, no, Aslan you does can't. Unexpected things in the book. That's one of the defining things he does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. And again, just comes back to Aslan as one of the main things they have to emphasize about the Silver Chair.
Yeah, so that's something I think it'd be awesome if they could just. I don't have someone in mind really. I mean, I have a couple. Like, we've talked about Brian Cox. You and I have, and he was rumored to be an original choice.
He was. I heard that he was.
Well,
cast.
He was straight up cast.
Something happened, and later down the line, when they were actually getting ready to record it, but he was the first choice.
Yeah, and I think that would have been. I would have liked to have gone that direction.
Yeah.
So it's all about Aslan.
That's true.
So the only other thing I guess that's on my list as far as hopes for the movie is it kind of ties into, I feel like that the movie shouldn't be overly epic. Like, keep the stakes low, keep it about the characters and their struggle, not about starting to save all Narnia. And they really make it about, primarily about Jill and her, just a personal journey, not all of the space-time continuum being on the line. specifically, when they actually get into Narnia, although I thought it was cool what they did with the picture in the bedroom, one of the cool things about the Don Treader movie was the picture in the bedroom scene. I don't want them to do anything that feels like it's on that scale with this movie, with the way they get through the door. Like with Prince Caspian, in the book, all it is boom, they felt this frightful pulling and they were in Narnia. And in the movie, it was this epic, the train is like coming, train station is like dematerializing or whatever. And I would like them to keep it really, really simple and just focus on the fact that, wow, they were in this dreary schoolyard, and then all of a sudden, paradise. Just focus on the emotions of that rather than just special effects extravaganza. And so,
gentle transition.
Yeah, I think that applies to the overarching tone of the movie. Make it a personal, character-driven movie, not the whole world's on the line. We got to save it. Hurry up.
And
trailer scenes.
I feel like one thing that's like in that favor is I feel like these big epic fantasy movies have kind of fallen out of favor. Like back when they were making Prince Caspian and Don Treader and Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, like that was very much like in vogue.
Yeah.
Like everyone was making these giant epic flicks. Like it was all about the fantasy. And I feel like these days it has kind of backed away from that because people have realized, yeah, we can do all the effects, but
Should we?
Should we? So mm-hmm. I think one thing that it makes me hopeful is where I see filmmaking in this day and age, like the films that are making the money are not the huge, like in your face, just like epic explosion. Like those aren't the movies that are making money. There's like superhero stuff, but a lot of stuff is still being people are like.
Well, you look at Netflix, for example, and yeah. you're able to appeal to a smaller niche yeah. kind of audience, which yeah, is what I wish they would do with this more.
It needs to be people. I think producers are realizing that movies need to be like there has to be substance to it, mm-hmm. and so that's what actually makes me hopeful for Silverchair. It's like. Just the way the industry is trending, it's like it is trending more towards like let's make this like about uh-huh. the people and not about
yeah
like
characters we want to come back to yeah. and watch more of. Uh-huh.
I hope that's true. I don't know. You might be more familiar with some of those trends than I am. I think that part of it is hopefully they realize, they're going to come out with Infinity War Part 1. Mm-hmm. They can make Infinity War Part 2, and it could get a 10% Rotten Tomato rating.
Still
it will make
yeah.
millions There's and millions and millions of dollars.
Definitely exceptions to the rule.
Well, yeah, no, here's my point. Here's what I'm getting, and I agree with you, because what I think hopefully they realize that this film, going with certain formulas isn't just going to generate the pull.
Yeah.
They're going to have to go with those characters. And I think that they do realize that this isn't a huge Marvel movie. We're going to have to do that. That's what's going to actually benefit us in the box office, is to make it character-centric. I think they realize that. I think they know that, hey, this isn't a big Marvel movie. And hopefully they realize there are those films out there, like Transformers, that can do that. And hopefully they realize that's not us. That's not going to do that. Yeah.
The day I thought we would mention Narnia and Transformers in the same sentence, heaven help us.
Well, that's what we're here to do right now, aren't we? We're here to get it out of our system right now, just in case they do Narnia and zombies and then Narnia and Transformers.
Narnia, the Michael Bay version. Can you imagine?
I'm trying not to. Macy, I see with your point of looking at trends, I see two ways we can go, one bad and one good. And the good part of what I think you're kind of alluding to is this trend towards, most of this stuff is sort of niche audience stuff. Why am I blanking? Even some of like Daredevil, even some of the smaller kind of Marvel shows
yeah.
and things like Breaking Bad and even maybe kind of the Lemony Snicket, where it's that came back on Netflix, where there is this, those aren't great examples, but there's this trend towards smaller, lower budget things that we can. Those are the cool things about the internet. Even if you have this right. niche audience that's spread out, you can still find them now. So there's two. So I see that one trend of it's lower budget stuff, so we can't afford all the special effects, but we can create characters.
Yeah,
Sherlock's another example that you can come back. You want to keep seeing these characters. And the other trend I see is cinematic universes. And I know Marvel's the only really successful one. Well, I guess Star Wars is now officially kind of a cinematic universe. But so I can see them. And that's where the trilogy comment kind of tickled me a little bit the wrong way, because is that what they're trying to do? Is, we need to make this Narnia universe and make this big epic thing, and we can have the horse and his boy, a Narnia story. and so I can that was movie Aristotle's. I got to credit that one to him, or blame that one on him, not me. So yeah, I see two ways they can go with this, and I wish they would go the lower, not necessarily Netflix, but smaller budget. Yeah, maybe Aslan's not gonna, the effects aren't gonna look as great, and maybe they can't afford to do a big battle scene. Wouldn't that be horrible?
So terrible.
Yeah, it'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Maybe they can't. Maybe Narnia won't look as slick and polished as maybe the other movies, but if. I think I'd be fine with that if they just make it really, really down to earth, down to Narnia, and character focused, and market it to a niche audience rather than everyone and their dog.
Yeah,
isn't it kind of sad that there's this discussion of, well, if they have too much money,
that's not necessarily a good thing.
They're just not going to focus on the characters. If they have less money, they'll have to focus on the characters. It's kind of sad that we discuss this as like an either or.
My,
but that's the way it kind of is. Sometimes.
Like, my feeling is that with money comes people.
With great power comes great responsibility.
With money comes people who have stakes, and then there's too many cooks in the kitchen.
You have to play it safe.
Too many thumbs in the pie. Like, there's just.
You have to go with what you know works.
Trying to please everyone, you please no one. And I really do feel
please everyone moderately. know?
But it, like, yes, you really do. Don't, like, no one really is super happy.
Well, I say that's what the Marvel movies, I think, in general, are like, everyone's pleased, you know, moderately. As far as, like, I mean, a lot of people, that was an entertaining blockbuster, really enjoyed it. To me, that's loved it moderately. I think having a really emotional, but powerful
experience.
Is there
anything about it that's special?
Yeah.
You know, and I just don't think there's anything about the Marvel movies.
They're good. They're well made. Yeah, enjoy them. But I enjoy them.
I go see them on opening day.
Yeah. But they're not special, and that's why
Narnia deserves better than that.
I'm convinced the Lord of the Rings would not be made today the way it was, because you would think, you know, well, okay, here's this guy, Peter Jackson. What's he directed? Heavenly Creatures and Brain Dead and other zombie movies. Cool. What should we do? Let's give him $300 million all at once. And let's have him make three films all at once. So, like, if the first one is horrible, the other two will fail also.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have him make
it
the movies.
It wouldn't happen today.
Should we give him a lot of oversight? No.
Yeah. You know why? You know why that happened? It's because Peter Jackson... It wasn't, there's a successful fantasy movie, I should make another one. It was, he made it because he read the books and really got an idea, really had a vision. This could be a cool movie. And he actually had to convince studios to do it. So the initial spark was creative. With the Narnia movies, the initial spark was, Lord of the Rings was successful, we got to make another fantasy movie.
Like, what's out there?
What's going to make us a lot of money?
Which, again,
it's what's going to have good return on investment.
Safe, easy.
Yeah, safe and easy. Lord of the Rings definitely fits that.
And that doesn't automatically make them bad movies. I overall like the first two. I don't think they're amazing, but overall enjoyed them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Narnia deserves
just makes it more complicated when you know, when you're working with big big production companies with big producers who just, with people's opinion has lots of sway. It makes it really hard for a few people's creative vision to come to fruition in exactly the way they want it to.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think with like these small budget movies, it's like, well, there's not so many people who get to have a say. So maybe one or two persons, like, creative vision really gets to play out the way they intended.
And that's maybe what they're doing now.
It's like what Brad Johnston said about
Joe Johnston.
Joe Johnston. Yeah. Sorry. Joe Johnston said, when he was talking about the, you know, his film that he liked, that he got to make, he said, well, no one was really looking over my shoulder.
Yeah,
he liked that. He's like, there was a low-budget film, so people didn't really care how it did, and so I got to be creative with it.
There's not so much money at stake.
And I kind of wish I'd asked him more about this, but what the process of the collaboration that David McGee, the Silverchair screenwriter, described in the one that gets posted, it wasn't the previous podcast, it was the one before that when we talked to him, but it was... he talked about it was really him and Gresham and a small group of people, and now Joe Johnston collaborating on it, and then deciding, okay, we like the script, we feel good about it, now let's go sell it to someone and see if we can get them to give us money for it, as opposed to buying the rights to it and inviting all of Hollywood to say, come on, you know, to fund it and say, okay, do this, all these ideas. The script was already in place and they liked it. And it didn't have to go through the same cooks in the kitchen kind of process. So I think from that perspective, the Silver Chair is probably starting off on a much better foot than the other movies.
Yeah. Because I think that's the one thing, like, when you see with, like, Andrew Adamson's, like, his movies, like, he had an idea of what he wanted to do. So he was able to just kind of, he had people saying, like, oh, don't do this. But, like, for the most part, he had his creative vision. And
personally invested
in
it.
Yes, very personally invested. And maybe that creative vision did not match what the general fan population felt. But at the end of
the
day...
Or at least the really nerdy part of the fan population.
But at the end of the day, it was one person's... version of Narnia.
I think largely was.
Yeah, which is it's whatever, however much you did or did not like that, it's better than this is one person's sort of idea plus
like
15 producers.
Don Treader, I would say, is what that was. Yeah. I think that was an assembly line, you know, big, you know,
like
executives sitting around a table making all the decisions.
It's like a committee saying, let's design a horse and you get a camel.
Yes. okay. No, I don't get that. What?
You never heard that?
I'm afraid I haven't.
Camel is a horse that's designed by a committee.
Okay.
Camels are offended.
It's like
no
the general idea, but it's just sort of not quite right.
Right. And when you have so many people with all their ideas, Don Treader was so many cooks in the kitchen, maybe saying make a horse and they got a camel. Is that where we're going with this? Sure, I'll go with that.
Sure, yes.
Okay.
Because I'm the podcasting prince.
And no camels were harmed or hopefully not offended in the recording of this podcast.
Especially not offended, because then they'll Twitter bomb us and it'll tank us.
we're doomed.
It's a different world than it was when Don Treader came out.
Yeah.
Twitter was just coming out, I think, at that
not
point.
Not so. Just Don Treader, just when Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out.
Well, YouTube came out the same year, I think. Didn't YouTube come out in 2005?
We just dated ourselves.
No, it was before that. It must have been. It was a little before. It must have been.
It was in its infancy. It was in its infancy. No one was using it.
iPhones weren't out yet.
Wow, okay.
That seems like a lifetime ago.
2007.
That's what this is. Yeah, we are obviously battle-scarred veterans of past Narnia movies. And yeah, looking forward, there's...
Emphasis on scarred more than battled.
No battles in Narnia. Scars, maybe.
More like traumatized.
But see, I don't want to make it sound like, oh, the other three movies were terrible. There were certain things about them that have left some open wounds. But yeah, I overall liked the first two, thought the third was a disaster. But
yeah.
I think there are definitely reasons to be hopeful about the fourth.
Yeah.
Well, especially because you've got this fresh take on it. And it feels us like, I think a lot of us
messed up yet.
Well, here's the other thing. And consider this. A lot of us, because we're Narnia Webbers, our job is to worry. And like, oh, my goodness. You
and put a bold face on it.
And say all these, like, oh, my goodness, what does that mean? You said and instead of or. What does that mean?
Explain. Overanalyzation committee.
It's the analysis paralysis. At the same time, here's the thing. Sometimes I think, and I just think about this now, we think, oh my goodness, wait, a fresh trilogy? A reboot? Oh my goodness, what does that mean? What disasters does this entail? Then we think, well, you know, this is going to be a continuation of what was established in Lion, the Witch, the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, and in the Voids of the Don Treader movies. It'll continue with what you saw there. And we're going, oh my goodness, what does that mean?
What does it mean?
So either way, so, you know, if they'd said that, would we not be a little more worried?
Whatever they're going to say, we would be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think no matter who is in charge or what they're doing, what they say,
we're going to pick it apart.
We're going to freak out about it. Yeah. So don't take it personally, guys.
Yeah. The one part, the most fun part of the whole Don Treader experience was this right here, guys. Something to overanalyze. I know.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
But so, I don't think it can be delayed any longer, Jim Fan. Are we ready to stump a Narnia Webber here? Or is there anything else?
I think we are.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Let's stump a Narnia Webber. So I know it's been about, how long has it been since mid-2005? I guess it's been 12 years? Okay.
Yeah.
Quick math. Okay.
Long time.
So the second trailer for The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I think, came out in about... October 2005.
Take them. There is a prophecy that two sons of Adam and two daughters of Eve will appear to defeat the White Witch.
And in that trailer, there was a line from Aslan that ended up getting cut from the movie. And I can help you out a little more. That freaked us out. Speaking of overanalyzing... it really freaked us out. Aslan says it to Peter. It's in the scene where Peter first meets Aslan.
Aslan, we need your help.
And he tells Peter something, gives him a line that was ultimately cut from the movie, and it really freaked us out when we heard it in the trailer.
Oh,
Do you remember what that line was?
I remember this thing, but I'm trying to remember what it was. It was something about...
That's your question.
Yeah. I know once you say it, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I remember. But I just remember people were like, they really, really got their knickers in a twist about it, and then it ended up being like nothing.
Well, because that they
cut it.
Because they cut the line out. I can give you a little more of a hint if you want, and kind of continue that thought.
I can't think of it.
First two words.
No, well, just like when we were talking about
to do with the. It's like your destiny or something?
Along those lines.
Something had to do with, like, is this like your destiny or like...
So when, although they cut, they could say, oh, our concerns were, you know, for nothing because they cut it out. Not really, because it ultimately reflected a larger issue, which is really making the kids the heroes, not Aslan. So that fear, I think, did turn out to be a legitimate concern. So he Aslan says something to Peter in the trailer that's like, wait a minute, like, is that really what... It felt like it was making Peter the hero.
Yeah, I'm remembering this, but I can't remember the words.
Pretty close, though. We're talking about 12 years here. How long has it been since you watched the trailer?
Life has changed.
But the line is actually,
I know, but understand, the future of Narnia rests on your courage. The future of Narnia rests on your courage.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good impression.
I remember because it was something like that, and people were like, wait, what?
And we're like, well, the future of Narnia, really, Aslan and the prophecy, that's really what it's all about. And now they're resting on Peter's courage, and we made such a fuss about it. Although they did cut the line, it was ultimately reflective of one of the bigger issues with Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe that hopefully they'll correct with the Silver Chair, which is that it should ultimately be about Aslan. And so many movies, I mean, it is all about don't run from who you are and you self-discovery and all that. And
family is a good thing, not a bad thing.
It's all about family. And so,
and the bad thing is, it's like not even like an interesting line. It's just like generic
family because that's G-rated and safe, and who doesn't like family? The point is that I think that what Narnia offers is hope that's beyond us. It's not just, oh, we're gonna discover who we are. And I think the more I see of the world, the more it is. The harder it is to be optimistic about, oh, like if we can just discover who we are and tap into our inner goodness. And Narnia offers hope that's actually a more, I think, fulfilling fantasy because it's rooted in hope that's beyond us. And so that's one of the big, big things I hope they retain with the Silver Chair.
Yeah.
Well, credits.
No. You wrapped it up nicely.
This has been amazing.
Uh-huh. Good to find out you guys are real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not holograms. Okay.
We're not fake. We're not psychopaths on the internet.
That
we know
that,
of.
That didn't want to end on that note, but okay.
But we're going to continue, of course, following the Silver Chair production every step of the way, analyzing all the latest news and even the stuff that's not news, but we're going to analyze it anyway to death.
That's what we
every
do.
Every little detail we get.
Who knows? Maybe, I don't know, maybe a Comic-Con sometime in
person.
We'll see.
That was the awesome.
If there's someone who wants to sponsor us, we'll be setting up a PayPal account later.
It's a GoFundMe.
Well, you can donate to NarniWeb, though. So that's already open now, but I don't usually plug that. But okay. Anyway, so either way, looking forward to having you guys, everyone, along for the ride. And good or bad, we'll have a fun time.
Yeah.
I hope, anticipating it and analyzing it.
Well, guys, this was awesome. Jim Fan and Glenn Puddle, thank you very much. And to all of Narnia Web,
further up and further in. Did you miss that?
No, I got it halfway after.
I'm sorry.
I was like, there it is. I know it. I was like, what is it going to say?
Halfway through, I thought, they've never seen us. They don't know I'm really in your Glenn Puddle and your Jim Fan.
Oh, I'll have a graphic on the screen.
Okay,
so it'll be okay.
I thought we didn't introduce ourselves at all.
We didn't introduce ourselves.